San Francisco Bay Area. It's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Here's Joey.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Live from the Bay with Joey. We've got an exciting show for you tonight because joining me will be two authors, and I'm really excited about their works. One is Patricia Ruiz Steele, author of The Girl Immigrant, and we're going to be talking to her shortly about this exciting book and what really made or inspired her to write the book, what it's about, and all that stuff. And then secondly, we'll have with us Gloria Lopez, who is the author of a book called An American Paella. And both ladies hail originally from California, where I'm from as well. And so I'm really excited to talk to both of them and about their projects, the work itself, and what really led them to do this. I want to make sure that you also stay tuned for another program that we're going to have on the Spanish that immigrated to the Hawaiian Islands, including my grandparents. And it's a story of many Spaniards throughout California, especially here, ended up in here in California. And so that will be a separate show. Really excited about that. And make sure you tune into some upcoming shows that we have, really some exciting things with several different celebrity guests, as well as another interesting show we will have airing in September. And that will be in conjunction with Ancestry.com. So if you've always wanted to find out about your roots, where you're from, your family roots originated from, that'll be a show that you really want to listen to. I've done these Ancestry-type tests, these DNA tests, probably about four or five times. Pretty much they're similar to some extent. The Ancestry.com test is a lot more, I would say, affordable for a lot of people. I think the test itself is $99, and usually get your results between 4 to 8 weeks. So you might want to try it out. It's not a huge investment, and you'll be able to get some information that will bring those pieces of those puzzles more together. Of course, your family, the information that you get from your family, you've gathered, is really important, and see if that lines up. A few things that I found on this report, maybe perhaps I didn't agree with, but it's always interesting, to say the least. So anyway, without further ado, my first guest is Patricia Ruiz Steele, and her book, again, is called The Girl Immigrant. So without further ado, let's see if Patricia is there for you. Patricia, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for this great work. I mean, I have a copy of it in my hand, and I kind of want to know and help people understand what made you decide to do a book like this. What is the book about? And maybe you can lead us through that.
Well, first of all, I am half Spanish, and I was raised in my father's household, which was the Spanish side of my family, for only 9 years. And when my parents divorced and moved us up to Oregon, I felt emotionally pulled towards that ancestral story, and I didn't know anything about it other than bits and pieces.
Wow.
And it took many years after raising my children to decide that I needed to know where my grandma and grandpa were from.
Absolutely.
I knew was Spain. And so I started looking for books that would lead me to the immigration story, and unfortunately I didn't find any. So I decided to jump into the genealogy part, and of course, then I didn't know where to start again. So
right.
I took a genealogy course, and I found out that there was a list available that would tell me possibly where my grandma and grandpa came from if I could find them on a list of the ships. And I didn't know then that there were seven ships that came. And I was so excited when I started finding information about them that I became addicted to genealogy. And from there, I decided that if I was that excited about finding out where my grandparents and ancestors came from Spain, knowing they went through Hawaii, maybe others would be interested in that immigration story. So I decided to start from the beginning and followed them all the way through Spain to Hawaii, and I amassed all this huge amount of information with documents and talking to family members and going to Spain and walking in their villages, and I was able to put it all together into a book that I knew would encompass most Spaniards' descendants' immigration stories. And that's where I came up with The Girl Immigrant, which is about my grandmother, my abuelita. And she left Spain when she was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She was the same age that I was when I was taken out of California and moved to Oregon with my stepfather and my brothers. And so I kind of felt her pain
and felt
her excitement.
Right. Well, now I have a question for you. Actually, I have a few questions for you, but I have a question. Let's go backwards here. Okay, so now you were with your Spanish side of the family till you were 9 years old, if I understood correctly. Then you moved to Oregon with your mother and your stepfather. Now, where was your father and where were your grandparents?
My father was still in California with his nine siblings. My grandma had 10 children.
Wow.
And my mother and my stepdad made sure that we went to California one time every year on vacation so that I was able to see my abuelita and abuelo, and we kept in touch with the family, but I didn't actually live with that Spanish side, and I always felt like I really needed to be part of that culture, and so it's been pretty exciting because I've been able to step back into that culture all these years later.
Mm-hmm. Did you kind of feel like you were, like, not ripped off, but did you feel like it just kind of kept you away from something that was so much a part of who you were? You know, because,
well,
you know, that DNA runs...
older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As a then child, you know, we don't really think about it as much, but I did miss my family and my aunts and uncles and my cousins and, my, of course, my grandma and grandpa and...
Uh-huh.
I did miss all that, but I had a great stepdad, but I did miss that culture, and I'm very happy to be part of it again now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what rang true with me on this? As you know, my maternal grandparents were both from southern Spain, and they too, my mother's parents, immigrated to Hawaii in 1911 aboard the Williston and their families. So I think this is so rings so true for all of us who are of Spanish ancestry, because it's really who we are. It's part of our story, and there's not that many of us left, and the ones that are left, the younger generations, have all mixed with other people, and it's a missing link, so to speak. You know? And I'm going to tell you, Patricia, it's so important that you did this for what I call our people, because there's a lot of people out there that want to know this stuff. You know, they just want to know about it. And, I mean, I have some cousins in the Sacramento Valley that I just reconnected with, and the younger ones are saying, you know what, you are so much part of that missing link that we did not have. So we are so glad that you're part of, you know, that we've reconnected with you. It's important. It really is important for history and for the continuum of families to really know where you're from, what the whole story is, how we got here, et cetera. Because Spanish people are not so, LinkedIn as some other nationalities. They're not as LinkedIn, but that's neither here nor there. The most important thing is that, you know, these works have been published and they're available for people to read and to be a part of. So thank you for doing that. So let's say, so you get all this information about your grandmother and you start doing the investigation, and I'm sure this led you to, like you had said, to the little towns where they were from and to maybe perhaps some distant relatives
Yes.
How interesting is that? That's great. That
it
must have been incredible.
Exciting.
Yeah.
It really was. And lucky for me, my brother speaks Spanish fluently, and he went to Spain with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd wanted to go for many years, and he had already connected with the Ruiz family in the Malaga area. And I had been investigating Abuelita's side in the northern of Spain, in the Zamora area. Mm-hmm. So I was able to introduce him to that link. And so all together we felt so filled when we came back, because the story of the immigration, so many of us descendants have no idea how they got here, why they came, what they saw to bring them. And those are the types of things that we found. You know, there was a broadsheet that the plantation owners in Hawaii lured them with out of Spain when they were so poor, and their young men were being conscripted in the military. They wanted to get out. They had no idea where they were going. They were poor and starving, and I didn't know any of this until I started looking into this story. I went to the Library of Congress looking for the immigration story. I thought maybe there I would find out where and why and how, and there was nothing except one tiny little book about a man who'd written a story about his family, and that's when I decided that's what I needed to do. To tell other people that, you know, hey, there is a story there, let's look for it. And I've had more people read my book and say, my gosh, this reminds me so much of my family.
Right.
It's not, even though it's my family, it's everybody's family. It's their story.
Right. Let me ask you, when you started investigating, and was your grandmother, over the years when you've written, when you started writing this book, was your grandmother still alive?
Yes. She told me wonderful stories, and so was my father.
Did you find out some things maybe that were surprising, or did you ever have any of those type of interactions?
Stories were pretty surprising, and I did include those in the book. Some of the things that happened in their lives, I'm sure happened in many of their lives, and it's funny. One of the stories that people really comment on is when she first arrived in Hawaii at age 9 and a half. Their fathers, she came with her uncle and his family and her aunt and her family, and altogether there were 9 children. And they had to go to school. Well, when she got to school, Portuguese people were running the school, and that happened a lot then. The Portuguese seemed to be kind of the bosses. So that kind of caused a little animosity, but, you know, I don't know about that much, as much as the school situation. So she was in the schoolroom, and she had to go to the bathroom. She's waving her hand wildly because she needs to go, and the teacher tells her that, no, she can't go until it's time for break. And she had already been on the ship with some horrible things happening where people didn't have enough toilets on the ships, and if they had to go, they had to go right where they were, and the entire floor of the ship was covered in hot tar to get rid of the smell. And this is in this little girl's mind is all she could think about. She had to go. Teacher didn't want to go. So she stood up quite upset, and she couldn't hold herself, and she just, you know, tinkled on the floor. She was so horrified at what she had done, and she had no other choice. And all she could think about was these horrible things that happened on the ship, that she started running, and she ran all the way home. She never went back to school again.
Wow.
So she gave up her education because of her humiliation and her fear and all these kinds of things, but she turned out to be a delightful woman with the best storytelling ability. But, you know, these are the kind of things these people lived through and fought through
right.
to come to be where we are today from her.
Yeah. You know, I remember as a child hearing from my grandmother, you know, stories of how people got really sick on the ships and people were very, very ill. And you know, some other stories that were kind of funny, et cetera. But I, again, you know, a lot of the stories were right at home for me because my grandmother was the oldest sister. So she was kind of like the matriarch of the family, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because now the parents were gone and all of her brothers and one sister would come over and visit her. And I would always hear these tales about, you know, what happened in Hawaii and that two were left back for a while, for a couple of years until they could come over as well. But they left a lot of, you know, friends and family and et cetera back there. And so when I heard that you had written this book, I was really very jazzed about it because I thought, you know, you hear so many other stories, right? You hear a lot about the Greek people, the Greek immigration, how they, you know, and you see movies about it, the Italians, the Mexican, you know, but not too much about Spanish people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they've been kind of lost in the shuffle somewhere, you know. And so I'm so glad that we have now some books that are available to people. Was your grandmother, when she obviously knew that you were putting this together for a book, right? Obviously.
No.
I would assume.
No, she did not.
Oh, okay.
She would have been thrilled out of her mind, but she did not.
Yeah.
I heard the stories, and I was there, and just she was just so wonderful for me. But no, she did not, and my father did not either. He amassed quite a lot of genealogy information, and when he died, I don't know where the information went to, and so I started from scratch.
Wow.
But he would have been thrilled to have all this information put together in this book.
Absolutely. Now, have you been able to get any copies of these books? Well, I don't know how well they in Spain they read English, but I was wondering if any of these copies of this book have actually gone back to Spain to maybe the towns where they were originally from, you know?
No, they haven't, although I do have some cousins that I've connected with since my trip, and they're thrilled about the book, and the second book that I wrote about the Silvan family has just come out, just been published also, and they're very thrilled about that, and two of them would really wish that they spoke English so they could read it.
Right.
But so far, I have not changed that into Spanish yet.
Wow. Well, maybe that'll be something eventually that'll happen, huh? That would
yes.
be wonderful.
Yes,
that would really
that would
be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's going to be so many, so many people that would be truly, truly blessed by having a copy of this. And I'm sure that there's, you know, that there's portions of the book through your investigation and through everything that were probably hard to, you know, and I don't want to take any thunder from the book at all, but I'm sure that there's portions of the book that are probably a little bit sad or
yes,
that
very
maybe
sad.
Yeah, open up our eyes a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And people can tell me, people can get a copy of this book by going to your website.
Yes, to my website. Or Amazon.com, or they can walk into Barnes & Noble and order it. However, to receive a signed copy, it would be it's only available through my website.
Which is,
and that is
okay, go ahead.
www.patriciabbsteele.com.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people ask me what the BB stands for, and I tell them that when I first created my website, Patricia Steele was already taken, and I was offered to buy the website for $5,000, and I decided to be creative. And I've always been told I look like Betty Boop, so that's what the BB stands for.
Oh, how about that?
PatriciaBBSteel.com, so there we are.
I like that. I like that, you know? I thought you were going to tell me it stands for baby, you know? Because
no,
I see these things
crazy.
That are like BB, it's like baby, you know? But that's great. So that's easy, folks. Think about this. Think of Betty Boop. And then go, okay, Patricia Steele, right?
Patricia B.B. Steele.
Oh, Patricia B. Okay, I got
it's
it. Patricia B.B.
Steele. Dot com, correct.
Dot com. Patricia B.B. Steele. Dot com. I'm so thrilled about this. And then you've got these other ones coming out. Is it a series? Is it like
actually, it is a series. I call it the Spanish Pearl series. The Girl Immigrant is actually the immigration story that would just be about anyone's story in their ancestry if they're from the Spanish descendants, especially the ones who went through Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
The second book that's just come out is called Sylvan Leaves, and it's my grandmother's historical biographical stories about all of their family members. And the third book will be the Ruiz Legacies, which will be the Ruiz side of my family.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see a picture of your grandmother at about your age?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, in fact, on the front of my book is a picture of her from when she was 12 years old.
Okay.
And I took it off the family picture that I had of them in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if this would be a good time to mention it, but I will, if it's okay with you. The Hawaiian Spaniards Facebook site has been posting pictures from a woman who is in Spain who found a big trunk full of documents and photographs. And they were posting different pictures of people. They had no idea who they were.
Oh,
and about 2 weeks ago, it was my family, my grandma, my
no
Abuelita
way.
And her. And she didn't know who they were, and so we found out they must have been friends for them to have saved their picture. So here's another wonderful adventure journey that I'm going to be going on to try to find out, adding a little more to our story. That's how the genealogy trek works.
Oh, now that's interesting. So now where does this woman live?
She lives in Spain. I don't remember the name of the town. It was unfamiliar to me. I think that her great-grandparents knew my great-grandparents in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They came to California for a short period of time, and they had enough money to go back to Spain and build a restaurant, and now their great-granddaughter is running the restaurant, and she found all these documents in these trunks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that they knew each other, and they must have been really good friends, so we're trying to work out the connection.
Oh, wow, wow. Well, you know what else I like that you included? So you included some recipes. Of course, some of these are very,
Yes.
They're recipes that I know very well, having our family making them and me being a part of making them. Hard work, and especially certain types of cookies that we do during the holiday season, Christmas season. Mantecados, or rosquetillos, or rosquete, which you have in there. And interesting, you know what's interesting to me about these is that everybody has on their rosquete recipes, they're somewhat similar, but then they're somewhat different, you know?
Right.
And or there's something that, like, for instance, your family recipe is almost identical to ours, except I don't think we used egg, but everything else that you have in there, we use. Exactly. And what's funny is I have cousins that will do it, and they will do it completely different. And I'll go, well, where did you get that from? Well, that was what we were taught. And I said, well, but you're adding some kind, you know, so they'll add different types of wine, or they decide, nah, I don't want to add, you know, like Muscatel wine, because it's harder to get now. We're going to add, you know, just regular white wine or a sweet wine. And it's just kind of funny because sometimes it changes the flavor quite a bit.
Well, do you think it comes from the, according to the part of Spain that they're from?
That's a good question. You mean the changing of the recipe?
Because Grandma Abuelita came from northern Spain in Zamora by Salamanca, and Abuelo came from Malaga, and, of course, they married, and she probably cooked a lot of what her family made, but she probably also cooked a lot of what Abuelo's family made and tried to make him happy, so they blended it somehow.
Yeah, I think you're right, because the rosquete and mantecaos are not northern Spaniard recipes. So now, you know, it's because of just, you know, the way everything is so intertwined and, you know, the internet and blah, blah, blah. Everybody, whether you're from northern Spain or southern Spain, we know, you know, there's interchanging on foods and, you know, you might like this or like that, but rosquete and mantecaos were from southern Spain, so their influence was from southern Spain. But that is a good point. And funny thing is, my cousins, that their recipe might be a little bit different. Their grandfather was my grandmother's brother, and their grandmother was also from the same town that our family was from, in Malaga, Estepona, Spain, which is a little town that's part of the Malaga province. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. And then my grandmother had a friend that was from a town just adjacent, next door to where my grandma was from, and when they made them, they would add, like, whiskey, and I'm like, wow, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a different, that's a whole different, yeah, that's like a whole different flavor. I was like, that's interesting. So anyway, but, you know, it has been such a pleasure to have you with us. It's just been a joy. So can you give people one more time that website for PatriciaBBSteele.com. Oh, I just gave it, didn't I?
You did it.
How about that?
And it's so, Steele with an E.
Steele with an E. And again, the name of the book is The Girl Immigrant. And folks, you heard it from Patricia herself. It is a series, so you want to make sure that you get it. And, you know, if you're of Spanish heritage, you want to make sure you just pass this information on and pass the show on to your friends and neighbors and your family, because it's so important that we keep this culture alive and with books like this. And it's just a wonderful book. I mean, going through it and reading some of it is just wonderful, and I think everybody will enjoy it. There's it's just so interesting. You've got so much information here, and the sugar plantations, you know, I had heard as a kid a name of a sugar plantation, and, you know, I don't even know if it's the one that my grandparents worked on, their families, but I was asking my mom, and she said, oh, that sounds familiar, and I said, was it Hakalau? And she goes, oh, that sounds familiar, and I said, is it because it sounds familiar because it was the name of the plantation, or it rhymes with Hakalau, you know? And so she laughed, and she said, no, I think it was Hakalau. And I said, oh, that's interesting. But, again, I got that from, you know, from your book. But I had heard the name so much throughout my childhood, so I guess that's probably where my...
Well, I think, too, that some of the plantations over there, I thought that we'd be able to just look up historical information on the plantations to find out where our family lived on, but unfortunately they didn't go by social security numbers, they went by bango numbers.
Right.
And the plantation owners each had their own number, so if they went from one plantation to another, they didn't take their same number with them. So they had a different number wherever they were. So I've had a little struggle that way, but, you know, the census information and the ship manifest information, which we're transcribing for everyone to eventually find their people, will be another big plus. But as far as the plantations go, you really have to go over there and look at the historical societies if you can, or find someone who will do that for you.
Right. You know, and I'm thinking when in 1989, I believe it was, I was out on the Hawaiian Islands singing, and then we took a side trip to the Big Island, and I walked through Honomu. And I'm wondering if, I know my grandparents were in Honomu, so I'm wondering if the Hakalau plantation was in Honomu, if that was it. But I do believe that I knew back then, and I was pretty young, what plantation it was. But we did find it, and I walked through this plantation, and it was so eerie.
Exciting, though.
Yeah, but and actually, I wrote this book about it, and eventually it'll be out, hopefully. But it was so eerie because I walked this road, and I still saw those homes that probably were there at the turn of the century, of that century, and the wind was blowing, and the sugar cane, the fields were blowing, and I could hear the sounds of the wind, and it was almost as if I could hear the voices of, you know, the kids and the parents and the families, and it blew my mind. It was just really, it was something pretty spectacular that I'll always remember. But anyway, thank you for your work, and thank you for being part of the Spanish community and what you bring to them, and, you know, the heritage that we do share, and that a lot of people are learning about now, or it's been lost in their family, and they need something to share with others, and they need something that's going to click and connect the dots. So thank you.
You don't want them to forget.
No, you don't want them to forget. So thank you, Patricia B.B. Steele.
Oh, you're welcome.
So again,
thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us, and thanks for really sharing your grandmother's story and the story of so many other Spaniards that are throughout. Well, the United States and abroad and wherever else they may be now, their families immigrated to the Hawaiian Islands. So thanks again. Be sure, folks, that you go to her website. Again, Patricia B.B. Steele, and Steele ending in an E.com. And without further ado, I think all the way from California, just like where I'm from, too, in the Winters area, I think I've got with me Gloria Lopez, the author of An American Paella. Gloria, is that you?
I'm here, Joey.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. I am so sorry that we were having these connection problems. I don't know what was going on, but we were trying to reach you, and we were unable to reach you. And
I'm here now.
So that's the most important thing. You know, I just as excited I am about your book as I was Patricia's. Yours is a little bit different. Yours, tell me a little bit about how you came up with this an American paella. And I think your story's a tad bit different as well, because you're from a community that has quite a bit of Spanish people whose families immigrated here, be it, you know, to the Hawaiian Islands, and then they ended up in Winters, California. But tell us a little bit about that community, how this love project, I like to say, came about, because really it is kind of, both of your projects are really kind of like a love project back to the Spanish community. And like I had said, you know, I think this was really missing out of our community for a long time, to be quite honest with you. I've never, you know, I've attended many functions, And I'll say, well, why don't we do this? Or how come there's no big Spanish fiestas? Like, if the Greeks do it, the Italians do it, and blah, blah, blah. How come the Spanish, the Portuguese do it, the Mexicans do it? How come the Spanish, well, we just don't do too much of that, you know. And then, well, how come we don't have books on this and that? Well, you know, blah, blah. And so I think this has been something that's been needed for a long time. So maybe you can tell us how this project came about and
sure.
What it's about, and then how people can get a copy of this. And again, what a great name, An American Paella. So it says it itself. You know, it says that name is just so inviting. So especially being that paella is loved by so many people now, right? So
that's right. It has become very popular. Well, my working title of my project was Our Stories of Hard Work, Strong Families, and Good Food in Winters, California. My daughter decided I needed something a little jazzier, so we came up with An American Paella, Becoming American While Saying Spanish, A Century of Memories in Winters, California. So what I did was, you know, I grew up in Winters is a very small town. When I was growing up, it only had about 1,500 people. Now it has about 7,500 people. But it has a very strong, active, and large Spanish population. And that's who I grew up with, all of these Spaniards that came either through Hawaii or they came a little bit later. I talk about three waves of immigration. The first one came through Hawaii. The second one came through the East Coast, Ellis Island, and other ports. And then the third one was right before and after the Spanish Civil War. So, you know, I grew up with such a rich culture and so many stories and traditions and the food that I wanted to make sure that these stories were saved. I kind of was hoping someone else was going to do this, but they didn't. So I decided, okay, I'm going to interview all these Spaniards. I know them all. And so I had a friend who was just graduated from college with a degree in videography. He came with me. We interviewed about 87 people here in Winters, and he did an excellent job with the lights and, you know, miking these people up. And so, gosh, the stories were just so rich that we decided to put it together in a DVD and into a book. And so, you know, so one of the first reason why I did it was just because I wanted to save our history. Another reason was that I believe that in the community of Winters, the Spaniards had contributed so much to the history of to the history of Winters, and there are a couple of history books about Winters, and no one ever mentioned us. And that's one of the difficulties with history. You know, it's always someone's story, and if you don't speak up, if you don't document it, it's not going to be saved. And so those are, you know, some of the reasons why I really wanted to preserve our memories and our history. You know, I wanted to keep those memories alive.
Wow, so that's awesome. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I've looked through this, and it's so cool, because I think that anybody that is of Spanish extraction or their family came from there shares kind of a similar story. You and I grew up in this, and, you know, I grew up in a very strong Spanish culture. And interestingly, my father's family was from Italy. And so I didn't grow up in that culture, even though he lived with us, but my grandmother lived with us. So and then my aunts and uncles were all next door and living around us. And, you know, we had all these Spaniards hanging around. And, you know, this was just part of my childhood. And so it's very, you know, it's interesting to me because we're a community that's not as tightly knit sometimes as some of the other communities. You're lucky in the fact that in Winters you are, but a lot of times in different parts of wherever one may be, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, a lot of people, you know, their families, people start intermarrying other people and other cultures, and then it becomes diluted. And then you kind of hear about stuff. Like, I had to laugh because, you know, mantecaos are a cookie that we make during the holiday, as you know, right? And so, and, you know, they're really called mantecados, A-D-O-S.
We butcher the language
sometimes. But we butcher, but yeah, and especially from southern Spain, you say mantecado.
Yes.
But I saw a recipe from... I get a load of this. I saw a recipe from some distant cousins. So, in other words, maybe their parents were they're my age and they're my cousins. So then these are the kids. And now they're passing on the recipe of mantecaos, right? So I was looking at the recipe and I was like, okay, that's real similar. But then I chuckled because the way they spelled the name of the cookie was M-A-N-T-E-O-S. Okay? C-O-W-S.
Oh.
Monte cows.
Monte cows. Monte cows.
And I laughed. I was like, are you serious? They go, isn't that the spelling? I said, not really, but, you know, that's pretty funny, you know. I
very
said, I said, yeah, but that's not really, you know. So, so that was kind of gave me a chuckle, but it's I think it's interesting because you know, I think the hardest thing for me is trying to maybe I tried to get across to a lot of different people, like even in Spanish clubs, how important it is to, you know, to save what you have and to be able to pass that down. And that's why I think that your work and Patricia's work is so important, because really, quite honestly, there has not been anything really out there that speaks of it, you know?
And that was certainly an impetus for me. I just, you know, and our stories are so rich, and it's, you know, there are many immigrants. I mean, the United States is a nation of immigrants, and there are similarities in the immigration process, the assimilation into the American culture. There are similarities between the groups, but we have our stories, and especially, you know, when you look at the Hawaii connection, that's very unique.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we needed to write our stories down, and it was interesting to me. I published this in 2007, and so now 7 years later, I am just have learned so much more than this, because I started out doing this in Winters, and to me, this was my whole world. You know, I grew up in this small town, and then within the last few years, because of the internet, because of Facebook, and meeting Patricia and some other people, like, gosh, it's just there are pockets of us really all over the United States, and I didn't realize that, and I just find that fascinating.
Right, and you know what, and another thing that's really fascinating is not only are there pockets, but there's different types of Spanish people, you know, which I wasn't raised maybe understanding or believing. I knew that there was us, and there was my cousins and family, and then there were people that I went to school with that said, oh, yeah, my mother's Spanish, and I go, yeah, really, Spanish? Or, you know, Spanish. You know, it was always will you please clarify that for us, you know? And it was always this concept of, you know, I thought all Spaniards looked just like my family. So if
yeah, and even within the Spaniards, though, we're different. I mean, my mother's side of the family came through Hawaii, and they were closer to the Malaga area of Spain.
Right.
And my father's family came in 1920 through the East Coast, and so they were outside of Almería. Gosh, you know, they were very different groups of Spaniards there. But, you know, we all came together here in winter, so it all blends, you know, eventually.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because then I heard through some other people, well, you know, there's the Spaniards of West Virginia. And I'm like, what? And then I met some of these people, and, you know, they grew up there, and their families were, but they talk like this. And I'm like, what kind of Spaniard are you? And then, right? And then there were the Spaniards of Louisiana, which were actually originally from the Canary Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And then their whole culture and their whole thing is totally different than, you know, what I knew or what I was. So, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's all very, very different. You know, just because, you know, people are from a certain country or their families were from their parents, or it doesn't mean that we speak the same, that we have the same food. That there's national types of food, but then there's different ways of preparing things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what I liked about your book, the book is great. I mean, so many stories, illustrations. And then the CD was pretty awesome, too. It was kind of funny. It was kind of hard to watch. Some parts of it were really difficult for me to watch because...
Tears to your eyes?
Yeah. You know, and what got me was this one gentleman, I'm trying to think of his name, but I told you, and he, I think he owns some kind of, is it a peach ranch?
Mm-hmm. Probably Fred Manis.
Yeah, and he got really emotional every time the camera was on him, you know?
Yeah.
And I totally understood that because... I understood what he was feeling, you know. I understood that connection, you know. And it's the same thing with, there was a woman there, an older woman, very pretty, but she had lost her father, and she talked about that, and she got very emotional, you know.
Did he in Carrion, Ireland, yes.
And so there were people there that, and I love the fact that there were so many other people that were, you know, they seemed very much part of what I knew as a child, and then there were people there that I thought, you know what, I know these people, you know, they look familiar to me, do I know them? Who knows? I mean, there was an older couple there, I think the gentleman has since passed, but I think they were both originally from Spain, and they had very strong accents. And
Tony and Isabel Cortez?
Yeah, and I looked at them and I thought, you know, I know these people. I mean, they look very familiar because, you know, Spanish people have a certain, there's a certain connection. You know, there's a certain, I don't know how to explain it. It's
and when
just,
you grow up hearing that language, it there's something about those experiences that they never leave you. You know, you grew up with people like that. That's one of the things when I've gone back to Spain twice, and I just love going to, like, the supermarket there just to see people that look like me, they look like my family, you know, and to hear the language is just so heartwarming to me, you know.
Right. I had a friend years ago say, you know what, I think you need to go back to Spain. And I thought, you know what, you need to, you know, fall off a bridge. What are you talking about? No, I think you need to go back and live there. And I said, for what purpose? And this friend of mine said, because they all look like you. And I'm like, what? I said, that has got to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard. No, because, you know, you'll find the people that look like you and that, you know. And I thought, you're ridiculous. Well, you know what? When I was there, and that was, I think, in 95. It was the first time, and I was visiting a cousin of mine. And she was living up in northern Spain. And then I went also to Malaga and everything like that. But we went to a club one night, and we were all dancing. There was a bunch of group of people, you know. And I looked around, and I said, oh, my God, I feel like I'm with my people.
You fit in.
I felt like I fit in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I felt like
I never had felt that before, actually, and I didn't realize it. But, you know, when you're there, you could feel your ancestors, you know. You just know that as your home. It's surrealistic, you know, just to feel that. But I love it.
Yeah.
And I can't get enough of it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is very profound. I would never change the fact that I've been born in the USA. I would
change.
Of course. No. You know, but I think it's very it's a very huge thing. Which what I wish the Spanish government would do, in fact, if anybody hears it that knows any people that are involved in positions of authority, what I think would be really nice for the Spanish government to do, they did this, I think they stopped this policy in 2011. But those of us that our grandparents were from there, it would be nice if they could extend like the Italians do, and I know the Irish government does, and you know, that we could have the opportunity to hold dual citizenship if we wanted to, you know?
Yeah, I believe that they offered the dual citizenship to those whose families were forced out during the Civil War. You could get, that was my understanding. That's, and they did offer that. For me, that didn't apply.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, and God bless, I mean, like, God bless all the Sephardic Jews that, you know, were ousted from Spain, like, in the 1400s and whatever. But now there's talk that they're going to be given a chance to hold dual citizenship. But that's, you know, and that they'll be able to, you know, claim that, which is fine and dandy, but I think, you know, it's also, it would also be fine and dandy, you know, that my relatives didn't leave in the 1400s. They left, you know, in the early 1900s, and it would be fine and dandy if you folks did the same thing for us, you know.
Wouldn't that be nice?
So, and if any listeners are out there that, again, you know any people in the embassy or what have you, make sure you let our voice be heard, because I think that, you know, I know the Italian government does that, and, like, I know that the Irish government did that as well, and some other ones. So I just think that it would be so nice.
You know,
but I do.
And you mentioned, you know, of course, you know, would never change your history that you love being American. And, you know, to me, that was part of my story, was that, you know, these Spaniards came over and they had such work ethics. And, you know, they came with nothing. The families were so important to them. They pooled their money. These are my stories anyway, in Winters. They pooled their money. They were able to become successful. I mean, in Winters, this agricultural town, and the Spaniards went from being the laborers to being the majority landowners in farming in this area because of their hard work, because of their strong families. And they really did achieve the American dream. I mean, it's pretty amazing how they did that within, you know, a couple of generations, and it's part of our story, I think. And that was part of my book, that, you know, yes, we left, we had nothing, we left, we came, we have been very successful for the most part, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, I think it's so important that these books are shared, and that people do retain part of their culture, because if they don't, it's going to be lost, you know?
Exactly.
It'll be lost. I mean, I just saw a thing about the Hawaiian culture. They were talking about the fact that by a certain time, I think PBS was doing a miniseries on it a while ago, but they said by a certain time, certain year, that the native Hawaiians would be basically an extinct people, and that they want to keep their culture very much alive, you know, and I see the same thing with, you know, the Spanish and their clubs.
Well,
the
studies show that it takes three generations to assimilate into the American culture, which you can look at it from either being good or bad, but, you know, the first thing to go is usually the language. The last thing to go is the food, and that is what we really hang on to, that food, and still make a lot of those foods. For us, we're almost in a time warp with some of our preparation of the traditional Spanish foods, because we still make them the same way that our parents or grandparents made them when they came in the early 1900s, and they left parts of Spain where they had no electricity, not even running water, and we still make those foods like they did. And when I went back, when I've gone back to Spain both times, when I go into those grocery stores, I'm just amazed that I find migas in the frozen food department, and there are like 25 different kinds of chorizo in the, you know, butcher department. And we still make our own chorizo. You know, mm-hmm. we make migas, we make all sorts of things, that, but we make them like our grandparents did, or our parents, and it's we're kind of in that little time warp.
Mm-hmm. But again, there's different types of meat, like you and I talked about.
Yes.
When I was watching your video, I was watching this woman saying, okay, now this is how we make it, and she's like, she's adding flour, and I'm like, okay. And then she starts adding, like, Bisquick or something.
Yes, she did.
And
that was
she
my
added
aunt, so that's the way we
and then she, yeah, and then she added water, and I'm like, what? You know, and so in our family, and the way my uncles did it and everybody else did it, it was made with bread,
yes.
Hard bread, and generally stale bread, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they cooked it, and then they cooked it in a lot of garlic and pimenton or whatever. And and then some people would add a little bit of milk to it, what have you. So it's interesting. Everybody does it a little bit different. And you have to realize, hey, you know, there's a reason for that. Maybe, you know, maybe they didn't, maybe that's the way they taught their family to do it. Maybe
Well, and everybody makes spaghetti sauce differently, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now I want to ask you something. Now that you said spaghetti sauce, this kind of reminds me of something. Okay, you said it takes three generations to lose
To assimilate into the American culture.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you, why do you think it is that Italian-Americans, Greek-Americans, those people, even Mexican-Americans, I think those are three that are really great examples, don't lose that as much as the Spanish people?
Maybe why because there's more of them.
Oh.
I think we're still pretty small. And in winters, you know, we still do, because we're a small town, we've been able to maintain a lot of those ties. And we do have a Spanish club that's in the neighboring town that everyone goes
right.
to. And there's another
right.
one out, there's one in Woodland, one in Rockland. And so they,
right.
you know, have their typical paella nights and bacalao and some different, you know, themed dinners that they celebrate their, you know, our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. When you're in a city and it's just a small neighborhood
mm-hmm.
that has mostly, you know, Spanish immigrants where they settled,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to move away.
I see. So that would be the reason probably.
And
okay.
Because we aren't that many
mm-hmm.
compared to the Italians or the Greeks or,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the other immigrant groups that make up
mm-hmm.
the United States.
Yeah, well, I was jazzed when I, you know, when I saw your book, too, An American Paella, I was like, right on, you know, because now, you know, instead of seeing these okay movies by Pedro Almodovar, you know, these
mm-hmm.
Spanish movies and his, you know, different ones with, you know, like Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's fine, but let's talk about the Spanish people that are here. There's really never been anything that really hits home. And I thought, doggone it, you know, the Greeks have my big fat Greek wedding. Now we have an American paella, you know? And I was
that's
like,
right.
right on. Okay, so now let me ask you,
mm-hmm.
if there are people out there that are interested in getting a copy of this, just like I told, you know, with Patricia
mm-hmm.
Ruiz Steele, how can people order a copy of An American Paella? And will they also get the DVD or they will not?
It is separate, and I
okay.
have just a few of the DVDs left, but I have lots of
okay.
books left, and they
okay.
can go to anamericanpaella.com.
Okay.
I have a website, and you can order it from there. It's on amazon.com,
mm-hmm.
and if they're on Facebook, just look me up, and you can get it directly from me also.
Wow, that's awesome. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I know both of you, both Patricia and yourself, will be joining me on the other show that we were going to be doing with that really target the Spaniards that went to the Hawaiian Islands.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything else that you want to just close with or want to say? If not, that's fine too. You know,
no,
I
just
mean,
think that, you know, history is seen through the person telling the story, and so it's important that, you know, we tell our history through our eyes and our voices. And that was, you know, sort of what, like what I wanted to do with my project. I have many voices in my book, and I just think it's good to hear from a variety of different people, and it's good to document your history and figure out, you know, because if it's good to know where you've been in your family, because then it's easier to figure out where you're going.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I know that, I mean, I want to thank you, and I want to applaud both yourself and Patricia for sharing your stories.
Thank you.
So thank you very much. And yeah. And how do you like that? You're probably going, all right now. I like that. All right now.
All right now.
So anyway, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight as well. And folks, I think what we need to do to take away, the biggest takeaway of this for me, I know, is that, you know, it's so important to retain your culture, whatever it may be. And if you are somebody that is of Spanish extraction, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, whomever, immigrated here, they went to the Hawaiian Islands, you know, I would just really encourage you to get copies of these books. You know, hold them dear to you so you can pass it on to your families, and so that, you know, the generations later, you know, perhaps your great-grandchildren will be talking about this. They'll have a copy of this. They'll have a copy of some recipes that they can use and try, and the stories, and it'll remind them of the family stories that they once heard of. These are so important to have with us and be able to share. So, again, I just want to thank you once again for joining us tonight, and I also want to encourage you to really share this with, you know, with friends, family. If you're out there and you belong to, say, a Spanish group or a Spanish club, share this with your club. Share this show with your club. Make sure that those people get a chance to hear this, and that they can, too, order these books, because it's very important to keep the Spanish culture alive. So, again, I want to thank Patricia Ruiz Steele, and as well as Gloria Lopez, for joining us tonight on Live from the Bay with Joey. And again, I want to thank you for joining us. And until the next time, this is Joey saying take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey.